And this is where we are looking from the design and construction specifications. We are rewriting that so it actually feeds into the operations needs. Because again, the most of the money in the life cycle perspective are spent in operations, not in design and construction. And it's around average 80% of the cost of a facility is in the lifespan of it. So if you don't organize it for proper operations, you will have trouble operating the facility. And there's a lot of waste there that we're looking at. And that's the whole tie-in into GIS systems, where if you can connect them in GIS successfully, there's tremendous opportunity on the operation side.
Welcome to a special Esri podcast. I'm Sarah Powell from Esri, and I'll be your host today. You just heard Lennart Anderson, Director of Virtual Design, Construction and Operations at Liro, highlight the long-term economic gain of leveraging building information modeling and geographic information system technology. In addition to enabling the design and construction of infrastructure and facilities, BIM and GIS make the connections that improve long-term efficiency, saving millions of dollars across all phases of AEC. Here, Kate Whittles from HR&A Advisors investigate how the fusion of BIM and GIS is helping decision makers rethink the economics of the entire infrastructure lifecycle.
Thank you, Lennart, for joining us.
Thank you.
So I know you've had a long focus in your career on critical infrastructure in New York. Where are we in terms of safeguarding our critical infrastructure today and focusing on making it more resilient?
I think New York City is one of those interesting places because for United States standards, it's an old city and it's so dense. So as far as the different layers that exist in the city, it's hard to get a holistic picture. But from the safeguarding perspective, I think they have a good handle on it. The other aspect from the people living in the city, I think there's a lot of work to be done.
So you've been living and working and teaching in New York City. What are some of the projects that are exciting you right now? How are we leveraging technology to advance some of the city's challenges?
New York is one of the most complex places as far as design and construction because of the massive amount of people that live here and the age of the city. I think some of the interesting things we're involved with right now, I would probably say the MTA bridges and tunnels, because we are addressing some of the really big structural issues with infrastructure through the work, because they manage 9 facilities, which is 7 massive bridges and 2 of the main tunnels that connects the boroughs together. And right now we are getting involved actually modeling all those facilities and seeing how we can help on the operations side and also do tremendous savings on the design and construction side.
With the Eastside Access Project, what have been the outcomes from this project?
There's one thing with the technology and what you can do with it. The other aspect is how do you change things? Because especially on these massive projects, the specifications are written often years ago, set in the deliverables, and how do we insert these tools and make change happen? And the only way is by proving that this is actually better than the legacy systems. And it's less about technology nowadays. It's more about culture and people. And how do we get people to actually pick up these tools? And we have an approach where we do sort of micro pilots where we show a very, very specific problem that we are helping them to solve and then working with the people in the field and asking them what would help you and what kind of problems can we help solve with this. We also, the approach of simplicity, because we're focusing on really using the technology connected to the field, to the real world. And the only way to do that is to make it simple for the people.
How has technology and the portability of a digital and virtual plan set helped to make these stages more holistic?
Yeah, I mean, portability is key for when you go out in the field. And that's the thing where we're looking at to make it lightweight, so it's instant. And that's where I think technology should go, where it's customized to many use cases, but it connects to a sort of central hub, which is the building information modeling in this case, the spatial database, where it solves particular problems for an inspector or for someone that helps them for layouts and things like that, that again ties back into the simplicity. And then on the operation side, it's a very different perspective. So we're working now with Long Island Railroad for Ethernet access and really the dialogue of how can this technology help them. And we realize it's a complete different thing they're looking at. When you construct something, you are breaking things down and organizing in a certain way based on means and methods and the sequencing of things. But operations is like, well, how are things connected? If this breaks, what are the things I need to look at to find what's the cause of the problem and things like that? So it's a reorganization, the model that we are looking at. And it's doable. And this is where we are looking from the design and construction specifications. We are rewriting that so it actually feeds into the operations needs. Because again, the most of the money in the life cycle perspective are spent in operations, not in design and construction. I mean, it's around average 80% of the cost of a facility in the lifespan of it. So if you don't organize it for proper operations, you will have trouble operating the facility. And there's a lot of waste there that we're looking at. And that's the whole tie-in into GIS systems, which I think is really exciting, where if you can connect BIM and GIS successfully, there's tremendous opportunity on the operations side.
Can we talk more about that and how connecting GIS with BIM and the benefits there? I think you focus a large part of your career on advancing BIM and you have even written a book about virtual design.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about how you've been combining GIS with BIM and how the sum of the two together are greater than them independently?
Yeah, and we can see, you know, where we are today and where we are going with this. And I think the ideal scenario is a bidirectional connection between GIS and BIM. So if you are operating a facility, I think the GIS, especially for these agencies that we're involved with that are distributed assets across the whole city, GIS is the best tool for this. But then you're going to do a design and a renovation, upgrade, or replacement. Then it has to move into the BIM world because then you talk about documentation, you talk about drawings, you talk about specifications and things like that. And we've done some experiments now where we take in BIM data for infrastructure and actually automatically create BIM content for pipes and underground utilities in general, and then creating documentation for that. So that's a GIS to BIM workflow. And then we're looking at, on the other side, when you build something like Ethernet access, for example, where we are looking now the deliverable, say, all the linear assets, all the tracks, all the signals and things like that. Long Island Railroad is using GIS to manage all their linear assets. So typically it's been they get drawings and then they have to manually input this in GIS. So instead now we're looking, how can we use BIM to actually port all this information, the location of everything, and not only the XY location, but also the Z location, the vertical, so you can create a leveraging BIM's 3D, the three-dimensionality, to shoot that into the GIS system, and then all the data that comes with an asset, and ideally have a live link, so you can actually theoretically go back and forth between BIM and GIS. Because there's a strength in BIM as far as the drawing documentation and scale, and you can mark up and the traditional engineering work versus the operations people where they don't really care about the drawing so much. They want to understand how things are connected and where an asset is and how to find it in the best possible way. And GIS already have that, which BIM doesn't really have that piece. So it's a sort of symbiotic relationship. That's the ideal.
Is immersive technology and the ability to quickly and cheaply capture progress the game changer here? And if so, how?
With the current paper driven, even though we have, you know, computers and things like that, it's still very analog paper driven processes. So with these tools that can sort of guide you, it just, there's so many steps that might be invisible, but there are tremendous inefficiencies. The time you spend to find something, the time it takes to communicate something to someone else, especially if you're in a meeting room with 20 people. I've seen jobs where we spend an hour figuring out what the problem is that we actually need to discuss. And with these tools, we're finding we can right away get to the core of the problem, communicate it, so you can have good decision making very quickly. Sort of a strange example might be that we have for Eastside Access over 10 vent facilities. City Transit of New York that runs the subway system, and Long Island Railroad, which is part of the same organization but is different divisions, they have to negotiate who's responsible for what room in these vent facilities because they share the tunnels. But if something goes wrong, they have to have contractual responsibilities and negotiations of who is at fault and who needs to fix it. There was 20 lawyers involved in these negotiations, and they couldn't schedule to meet at the same time in all these vent facilities. So it was cheaper for us to go and scan these, all the facilities, give them a web interface where they can virtually walk through the facility, sort of like Google Street View, and then agree on every piece of equipment there. And it saved, you know, 20 lawyers spending weeks and weeks and weeks just walking through a facility. Gets very expensive. So this, they could sit in their individual office and do this. So the scanning was paid by just the transportation cost of these lawyers, really.
Right.
And this is one of those like unexpected use cases, but it just illustrates these kind of hidden costs that you can eliminate and save. And then in the end, we had scans of all the vent facilities that we could use for all kinds of other purposes. So you have a very long list of use cases you can use for these kind of problems.
From building all these different models for different instances around New York City, I understand you've created a city model of New York with the different project details. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So this is something that derived, because Eastside Access is an enormous project and is 6 miles from tip to tip, our involvement. So we're dealing with sort of city scale environments. It's it's one of the largest BIMs in the world. It's 125 models that are connected together. We spend a lot of time on coordinate systems, making sure it fits in the right place and things like that. And as we learned a lot about in New York State Plane coordinate system is the one that used by most agencies in New York City. So we implemented that, and then we said, let's do all our projects this way. So we created sort of a master model that every project pops into the correct place in the city. First, it was just an exercise to understand, did we locate our project correctly as a validation process? But then we realized this is like we are adding pieces to the big puzzle of the city. We're using it internally. And this where it fits so interestingly with GIS, because we started loading GIS data into this model. And this is sort of GIS to BIM, and then the natural progression going BIM to GIS, because GIS handles city scale things much better than BIM. So naturally sort of evolved from our understanding of we need to locate things in the city well, not only in XY, but also in the Z coordinate, like because we're dealing with tunnels and you know, how far underground is it? How does it relate to other systems and things like that?
When I think about architecture, engineering, and construction, I don't always think about disruption and technological revolutions, yet you've been employing it so much in these projects. Do you think that's a change in the industry? Do you think the industry is going to become a hotbed for advanced software development?
Yes. The amount of investment right now that's happening on startups in the both the AEC space, but also on the facilities management space, it's just gone up, I think, 10 times the last 3 years or something. So it's I think there's an awakening now. This is sort of maybe not the last industry, but one of the last industries, but by far the biggest industry that is so behind in the technology. Because the things I'm talking about is still a vast minority of the industry at large. It's very sort of pocketed, and this industry is very tribal, I would say, in the different trades and so forth. So it's ripe for disruption. And also another interesting thing is involved with the New York City has the 2024 energy mandate, where every building over 25,000 square feet has to perform to a certain energy standard. And the city is going to look at the energy bill for every building over 25,000 square feet. If you're paying too much in your energy or using too much energy, you're going to be penalized. And this has to do with climate change, that we have to do something about this. And I think New York City is the third worst city in the world as far as CO2 emissions. And 70% of the CO2 emission is from buildings. And it's much worse than most other city in that sense. Usually it's around 40% comes from buildings in big cities. So there needs to be a massive effort of retrofit, being exterior envelope, the heating and cooling systems and things like that. And this is happening. So they're saying around 2024 is going to be over 10,000 buildings that needs to be retrofitted. And then by 2030, it's going to be including every single building in the city. And there's going to be a lot of those buildings that needs to be retrofitted. So we're looking now, technology is the only way to actually handle this. You cannot do this with the analog methods of how are the evaluation of buildings going to happen, how is the assessment, how are going to be the design and implementation of these retrofits. So this is where a perfect examples of BIM and GIS connectivity, where GIS should be used to manage the big picture of the whole city of how are the retrofits going, to be able to understand of, you know, by 2024 and beyond, are they on target, are they behind, and so forth. And then on the individual building owner level, can BIM be used to help to process and evaluate the building quicker and then port that into GIS system? So I think this is one of the drivers which will force technology to, because it has to, otherwise this is not going to succeed. And
right.
You know, with climate change and everything, there's no discussion. We just have to do this. And I think this is one of the things I'm seeing is going to be a driver. The requirements and the complexity of the outcomes are much higher now.
Are you hopeful that with the reduction in project costs, it will result in better infrastructure projects?
Yeah. I mean, I think the danger in New York, because if you look at East Side Access and on a lot of other projects, they're so over budget, so delayed. The politicians are really afraid to take the responsibility of initiating projects. So it's like we need to stop that vicious downward spiral. Because then it's hard for them to get funding because everybody knows it's going to be over budget and delayed. So I think using technology in a better way to actually streamline this. And I think the GIS BIM connectivity, the concept of a city model, because the amount of waste is because you don't know the context, the complexity of these big projects. If you have a better overview and can make the better decisions, that it will help in the planning, it will help in the design. Why are we doing all these things? I mean, it's create better environments in the city. And New York City is very interesting in that there are more people leaving the city that is coming to the city, which is the first time in a very long time, more and more people are moving to the cities, and that's not stopping. But why in New York City is this the case now, and more people actually leave and then are coming? There is a problem here, and we need to get much better in New York to make the infrastructure, you know, how to get around, how, you know, the function of the city, the performance of the city, and so forth, because we need to make it run much better. And I think these BIM GIS tools are a vehicle in this to make it possible to understand and also understand what we can do to make it better, because right now, it's hard to do it because you don't have a complete picture. I mean, we have a map of the city, but it doesn't tell the whole story. And to find a way of centralizing all that information, I think that's where GIS is the platform. And now with GIS moving into 3D and really spatial data with the Z dimension, it's possible to visualize, I mean, how is the city doing and what can we do about it? So I think it's really that, you know, how do we make better environments to work and live in and to visit?
Lennar, well, thank you for coming and this wonderful conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much, Katie. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this special Esri podcast. And thanks to Lennar Anderson for explaining the technology fusion that's enabling smart infrastructure.